Welcome to the Liberty Education interview series. We have with us today Carter Page, former foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign and founder and managing partner of Global Energy Capital. He previously spent 7 years as an investment banker at Merrill Lynch in London, Moscow, and New York, where he served as chief operating officer of the Energy and Power Group. Carter is a graduate of the United States Naval Academy, holds an MBA from the Stern School of Business at New York University, and is a chartered financial analyst. Carter, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Robert.
Given that the phony Steele dossier was used to get a FISA warrant to spy on you, I'd be really interested to know what person or persons you believe to be most responsible for including the dossier in the FISA application, even though they surely must have known that it was nothing more than political opposition research and unverified at that. So who do you believe were the main people insisting that the Steele dossier be included in the FISA applications?
You know, Robert, what I have learned from the last 3 years of my life is, given the fact that in this massive intelligence failure and political hit job that was committed in order to take out President Trump, or originally candidate Trump, I'm always very cautious and circumspect in terms of pointing fingers, right? There has been a ton of evidence based on many hundreds or thousands of hours of testimony in Congress and in the federal government thus far. But there's various indications, but I think the good news is that there are a lot of people looking into this, both in the U.S. Department of Justice as well as some top committees in Congress. So I think the answer to your question we should hopefully learn sooner rather than later. But I'm very cautious about pointing any fingers at specific individuals, you know, given my personal experience of people having various political motivations in doing that illegally, really, against President Trump and myself. So we'll see.
I can certainly understand that. Let's hope it's sooner rather than later, for sure. Would you agree or disagree that the real purpose of issuing the 4 FISA warrants and the entire Trump-Russia collusion investigation was really to deflect attention from Hillary Clinton's illegal activities and help her win the 2016 election?
Well, again, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where there's a lot of indications heading in that direction. I think the one thing, you know, if I had to make a little, not correction, but, you know, add on a little bit to sort of your introductory comment, you know, they really weren't, as I was alluding to, they weren't coming after me per se. They were trying to find a way to essentially destroy candidate Trump's possibility in the 2016 election, and really to spy on his campaign. And they were very successful with that. So, you know, I think, you know, going back in sort of broad buckets, in addition to various people who were committing various crimes, one group, which was obviously at the center of this, is the media. And they were, you know, as you can see from the initial details of what we've, the little glimpses that we've gotten so far about the fraudulent FISA process, you know, they were very much at the center of this whole misinformation campaign. One other sort of, related point in terms of Mrs. Clinton. Originally, I had word from people within the intelligence community that I knew, or contacts with the intelligence community in September of 2016, that there was this various illicit activities going on and that, to a certain extent, the Clinton campaign was involved. The one thing I would mention and draw attention to, and as we've subsequently seen, and as there's new a couple of new court cases this week related to this, it really goes far beyond the Clinton campaign in terms of political operatives. You know, as we know, since various admissions in 2017, the Democratic National Committee and their lawyers and various other operatives were really pushing this. So, you know, it goes beyond just the Clinton, you know, again, the Clinton campaign is a thing of the past, but I think there are a lot of other people in Washington, still in power in Washington, who have not had any responsibility. So I think it's important to point that out.
Knowing that the FISA warrants were based primarily on the unsubstantiated Steele dossier, what's your take on the FISA judges who issued them? I've always wondered whether they really were part of this or not. Do you believe the judges are part of the cabal that tried to overturn the results of the 2016 presidential election, or were they simply duped?
Well, I am very cautious about pointing fingers when I don't know. What's really interesting, you know, if you look back to these partially, very heavily redacted FISA, fraudulent FISA warrants, and the the courts accept, the four court judges that accepted these frauds on their courts or on their one court, you know, four separate members of the court were involved in this or that actually signed off on it. If you look at the back and the redacted elements, there's a lot of redactions in the warrant affidavits themselves with Mr. Comey, Mr. Rosenstein, Mr. McCabe, Sally Yates, all these people were foisting on the FISA court. However, if you turn back to the end of each of those four affidavits, they actually have the section where the judges themselves were, the part that the judges, the four respective judges, signed. And what's interesting about that is those are almost entirely blacked out. So again, I think there's very little to go on. I want to give Judge Collier, Judge Mossman, Judge Conway, and Judge Deary the benefit of the doubt. But again, there's a lot of investigations going on, and we'll have to see how it all plays out.
If I understand it correctly, you previously did work for the CIA, the FBI, and the State Department. So why do you think they chose to target you as a Russian spy?
Well, I think there's been a lot of intelligence failures over history. And in many cases, with the Iraq War being a primary example, there were various political motivations in the background. So I think, that was a key element of it. I think there's, again, a lot more to come out, and I'm excited that hopefully we're starting to take some initial steps towards the truth, but there's a lot more to be said about that. And I've always, in terms of my support for the CIA and the FBI going back many, many years, I was always very cautious and, circumspect in terms of talking about that. However, if you listen to what I've had to do now is, given the fact that there's been so many leaks and so much false information put out there by the Democrats and their political operatives, particularly in the media, I've had to be more start to talk a little bit about that. You take a guy like President George H.W. Bush, on the CIA website, there's materials about him in the early 1960s, being a supporter of the CIA, similar to some of the stuff that I had done, when he was involved in the energy industry overseas, right? But throughout that President Bush's life, he never talked about that. He was asked about it many times, and he never dug into that. And I wish I could have, similarly been respectful and cautious about speaking about these things, but it's just such complete lies that I think I've started to say some initial few words about it.
And I hope I pronounce this correctly. This Konstantin Kilimnik or Kilimnik, his delivery of the so-called peace plan to the Trump campaign in 2016 in August 2016 was flagged by Mueller as potentially nefarious. But it's interesting that its earlier delivery to the Obama administration wasn't even mentioned, which many in the intelligence community might call deception by omission. I just wonder what your thoughts are on this.
Look, there is so much deception. There are so many countless omissions in this Mueller dossier, which Congressman Nunes and others have been correctly calling it. And so, you know, it's pretty amazing. And I think, you know, if we had the next 2 weeks for this call and for this broadcast, I wouldn't be able to go through all of the radical mistakes that the Democrat donors put together on behalf of Mr. Mueller. So it's unfortunate.
Okay, speaking of Mueller, let's get into the meat here. Let's get into the Mueller report. First of all, what's your overall assessment of the Mueller report?
You know, I actually wrote an introduction to it, which you can get on Amazon. There are just, you know, similar to a lot of other false pleadings by the U.S. government over recent years, particularly under by some of Mr. Comey's friends, like Mr. Mueller's friends, guys like Mr. Comey, right? That, you know, it's just a lot of false information and a lot of half-truths. You know, I think it's interesting, and I think it's a correct characterization when you call it the Mueller dossier, because it's very similar, you know, for political purposes. They're just attacking someone with either an incomplete story, or in the case of the original dodgy dossier put together by the DNC's consultants, you know, just completely false Russian information. So it's unfortunate.
And in line with that, what do you think Robert Mueller's objective was in calling a press conference after finishing his report?
I have no idea. I think there's a lot of open questions, and perhaps they'll get into it in July, July 17th, when they have their various public hearings in front of the House Intelligence and House Judiciary Committees. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it sounded an awful lot to me like sending a message to the Democrats in Congress to start impeachment hearings.
I think a lot of that is more focused on the obstruction part. And again, what's interesting about it, and I think the overall broader hypocrisy of this entire venture, is, you know, if you want to talk about obstruction of justice, there has been very little considered thus far about the pretty clear, in my view, obstruction of justice in the U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, you know, which was committed against myself, and really as a way of, you know, doing damage to the Trump campaign, the Trump transition team, and the Trump administration, particularly when you factor in all of the leaks and the lies that the various associates involved in that were in various forms doing with the media. So
I agree with you. I think there's collusion all over the place, and they haven't begun to address it yet. But two last questions on Mueller. When do you think Robert Mueller knew there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians? Because I know that's going to be a big issue when he appears before Congress.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, or one of the big nails, I guess you would call it, Robert. So I know a lot of senior Republicans have been focused on that and have already said that that's definitely going to be a key issue to drill down to when they start having those conversations on July 17th. So time will tell, but it's I think you're hitting the nail on the head with that key issue.
And overall, the last question on Mueller, what do you think is going to come out of his July 17th appearance before Congress? Do you have anything you want to share with us as to what you think?
Well, I think, you know, there's my best bet. You know, again, I'm cautious about, you know, given the crazy ways that these long-standing people that have worked and lived in Washington for all of their life, you know, have a way of manipulating the truth, or, rewriting history. I think it's very difficult to say, but I think if the if a lot of these things that the Republicans want answered are fully considered, and he gets somewhat honest answers from the various people they'll be talking to, then I think there's going to be some huge embarrassment for the people that perpetrated this fraud from the very beginning. So hopefully people will be held accountable. And I've read reports that in addition to Mr. Mueller himself testifying, there'll be various closed hearings, I believe, or closed interviews between at least one of the committees and members of the Mueller's team, right, which presumably would include some of the Democrat donors who were operating on his behalf. So that should be, to me, particularly interesting as well, besides for the, television big show.
You know, let's switch to your trip to Moscow in July 2016. It appears, at least to me, that it was the trigger that caught the attention of the Intelligence Committee. And as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, you gave a speech in Moscow in which you supposedly criticized U.S. policy toward Russia. And I think people would be interested to know what you objected to in the U.S. policy toward Russia, which I assume would be referring really to the Obama years, right?
Well, what's interesting about that, and this is a perfect example of the overlap and interface between the fake news media and these, partisans that have been running rampant within our Justice Department over recent years, right? I think both the way you framed the question in terms of my speech is precisely the way what was framed in the fraudulent FISA warrant against me. It's precisely the way that they posed that trip in their false Mueller dossier from a couple months ago. But really, I mean, if you look at what happened, they pulled a couple of words out of a speech, right? This is a broad speech on the political economy and international political economy of a diverse array of countries, right? I was referring to economic developments and related political drivers across Eurasia, right? This is Central Asia, China, over a billion people there, the Middle East, across Europe to the United States, right? They cherry-picked, and this really highlights the falsehood in the fraudulent Mueller dossier. They cherry-picked a couple of words and mischaracterized it. Of this 5,000-word speech I gave, right? They pick a few words out and make it seem, like I'm so critical. It's nothing like that, and it's just it was completely out of control. But what's interesting about it, there's an important clause within the FISA statute, and again, that the point you just made was in the the FISA report as well. Right, or the FISA affidavits against me. And there's a little section within the FISA code, for who, any lawyers on the listening to your broadcast, it's 50 USC 1861A2B. And that says, an investigation conducted under this section, under FISA, shall not be conducted on a United States person based solely upon the basis of activities protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, right? So I was giving a speech at a university, right? If you read the Constitution, people think of the First Amendment and they think, well, that's really for the multi-billion-dollar media organizations, right? Let's protect them. Well, the First Amendment also includes freedom of speech and the freedom of peaceful assembly, right? And that's exactly what I was doing. Again, it wasn't even critical. You know, even if it was a barn burner speech, which I think, you know, they're trying to spin it a little bit that way. Even if that were true, you know, there's no basis for coming after someone like this. And that's precisely what they did, unfortunately. So, I mean, it really is a sham. And not only is it a sham in terms of freedom of speech, but it's a complete First Amendment violation in terms of freedom of peaceable assembly, right? That is to get together for peaceful purposes. And that's exactly what I did in all of my meetings with other Trump campaign volunteers and other Trump movement supporters in 2016. And again, you know, with the full power of the United States government, the U.S. intelligence community, including FBI and CIA, Department of Justice, you know, these massive government bureaucracies came down upon us like a load of bricks. So it really is a historic sham. So, but again, we'll hopefully much more details will come out on that over time.
While we're talking about this, Carter, speaking for myself, I believe Democrats have actually endangered America by making it almost impossible for President Trump to work with Vladimir Putin in a constructive way. If Putin is truly a bad actor, as they all claim, as Trump-Russian collusion true believers claim that, wouldn't it make more sense for the President of the United States to be in direct communication with Putin? I'd be interested in knowing your thoughts on this.
There is no question whatsoever. And again, I go back to the concept of, you know, the right of peaceable assembly, right? No one in all, not only in 2016, you know, my last trips to Moscow, but throughout the over quarter century, I first went to Moscow as a U.S. Naval Academy midshipman. I was part of the first ever exchange program between the it was then the last year in 1991. It was the last months of the Soviet era, right? So it was the first ever exchange program between the U.S. Naval Academy and then the Soviet Naval Academy, right? And throughout the years since, throughout the last, you know, several decades, no one has ever asked me to do anything even slightly illegal or unethical in any of my trips there. So it's just, it's pretty extraordinary. But, you know, I think exactly to your point, there is all the feedback I did get in terms of just talking to the average man on the street and some scholars and, you know, maybe having some discussions with people at the graduation reception. Everyone just had a very positive, you know, just they want peace and they want, you know, they don't want, they don't want continued wasteful conflict. And so I think, you know, it really is, I think you're making an absolutely spot on point. And this is a real, it's a tragedy if you look at what they managed to do. And there, you know, there's a close analogy in this sense. You know, if you look back in 2008 in Barack Obama's campaign, right? He similarly, in some ways, you know, much less considered and much less based on, you know, a thoughtful, fulsome strategy. But he too said, well, we don't need to do any more wars in the Middle East, right? And he was focused in that case in terms of, you know, bringing the troops home from Iraq. Now, of course, what we saw, you know, through a lot of failures during the Obama years, is, you know, that was during the whole rise of ISIS. And, you know, that it became really ISIS grew across wide sections of Iraq and Syria, just making the country go completely out of control in many ways. And, you know, thankfully, President Trump has been able to reverse that trend and, you know, help forge positive more positive direction in Iraq and the Middle East. So, but you know, it's pretty amazing that where, and he, you know, frankly, President Obama had similar headwinds in Washington, right? There's this foreign policy intellectual community that's always trying to keep to the status quo. And that's the great thing about President Trump. He's really been pushing to, you know, reconsider some of the mistakes that were made, you know, not just over the last couple decades, but going back through to the very beginning of the Cold War in the 1940s. So, and but I'm cautiously optimistic. I think what is happening now in terms of these positive developments, and now that the truth is starting to get out there, is we're really seeing a potential breaking point, right? Where all the fraud that was committed against the American people, against President Trump and his supporters, and really, you know, going having implications far broader. I think the fact that that's now being fully understood may be a real turning point in world history and for the history of America. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
I feel exactly as you do. I'm cautiously optimistic, and I hope after the 2020 election, which from what I've seen in these Democratic debates, if that's their best, I assume that Donald Trump's going to win in 2020 in a landslide. And if that happens, I hope he really gets serious about a real relationship with Russia. You know, right out of The Godfather, keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. If Russia really is this terrible threat, and I don't think they're but a small fraction of the threat China is, but if they're a threat, my gosh, he should be in continual contact directly with Putin, and I hope that happens. I want to turn to just a couple of more things here to wrap it up. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, Carter, but as I understand it, you actually sent then FBI Director James Comey a letter just prior to the 2016 election, which you stated that the investigation was a witch hunt, but he never replied to you. And then about a month later, he applied for a warrant to wiretap you. Is that correct? So what do you, if this is true, what do you think all this means? What do you make of it?
Absolutely. Well, it's you raise a great point. And unfortunately, they really, I mean, it just shows how fraudulent this whole process was to begin with, right? And there are some very extreme measures that are taken in this whole FISA process, right? And the fact that I provided this information, which should underscore for any reasonable, sane-minded individual how much of a fraud this entire false allegations were from the Democrats and their friends in the fake news media. You know, anyone with even a slight bit of common sense would have seen that. Unfortunately, that was not the situation we had. And, you know, I think it just underscores, and it's another little sliver of evidence. I think there's going to be a lot more. But the fact that that was not correctly reflected there, and that that the U.S. government then continued to meet with the person that was being paid by the DNC, Mr. Steele, throughout October 2016, you know, in the days and weeks before that FISA warrant, I think, you know, it's a real dual system of justice, right? Here is a person who's going to have all their civil liberties, you know, myself, as well as, you know, the people that I was associated with, other supporters of the Trump campaign and the Trump movement, on the one hand, and then you've got this guy being paid big bucks by the DNC, who's also at the same time getting paid by the FBI, and they decide to go with this foreign agent instead of a distinguished U.S. military veteran like myself. So, you know, we live in this dual justice system, but hopefully that's being fixed as we speak by Attorney General Barr and his team, but we shall see.
Finally, Carter, one last question, and it's really an important one. Given that you were never charged with a crime, what recourse do you have against the federal government, and what actions, if any, have you already taken? And I think this is an important question to many people, because they realize that this kind of thing could happen to them.
Well, what's interesting, I think it's symptomatic, Robert, of the just the deceitful behavior of people in within the U.S. Department of Justice. You know, I have a couple of lawsuits that I've begun, you know, initially pursuing. One of them against the federal agency, Broadcasting Board of Governors, which helped, you know, transmit this fraud to the American people. This is your taxpayer-funded dollars helping to fund these fake media organizations, propaganda agency of the U.S. government. So I have a pending case related to that. But, of course, you know, the U.S. Department of Justice thus far has continued their same pattern that you saw during the Comey era and the Sally Yates and Loretta Lynch. You know, all those people at Justice Department have just been continuing their pattern of false court pleadings. And so that's what we've seen thus far. But, you know, again, it's been a slow-moving process. I think the good people at Judicial Watch and Jay Sekulow's organization and a lot of civil rights-focused transparency, freedom of information organizations have been pushing this. And they've been frustrated, too. So not much progress as of yet, but things are definitely looking a lot better since Attorney General Barr took office and started beginning to clean up shop a bit in February of this year. So we shall see.
Well, Carter, I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us today, and I hope that after all you've been through, it will result in a lot of good things happening for you in the coming months and years ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Robert, but I just hope a lot of the problems that have been created for our country, more importantly, also get resolved. So fingers crossed, we shall see.